It's Wednesday, May 19th, 2021. I'm Emma Lieberman, and welcome to TMI Daily, your daily roundup of everything people are talking about online, since they aren't allowed to talk about it in person. Last night, New York Attorney General Letitia James announced that the state's investigation of the Trump Family Organization is now a criminal case and no longer civil, which seems appropriate, because the Trumps have never been civil about anything in their miserable lives. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said that he does not support the bipartisan commission to investigate the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol, saying that there is nothing new a commission could learn. You know, it's too bad Trump supporters didn't try to overthrow Benghazi, since Republicans had no problem investigating that 8 times to no avail. Texas Governor and America's worst impression of Professor X, Greg Abbott, signed into law a fetal heartbeat bill that will ban abortions as early as 6 weeks into a pregnancy. I mean, maybe it's just me, but I don't understand why anyone would want abortion off the table in a state where you could get knocked up by someone who voted for these two jack-offs. An alleged Capitol rioter was turned into the FBI by a fellow patient at the dental office, proving that not everyone who tried to overthrow a government for Donald Trump was a toothless moron. CBS announced their new schedule this morning, and their Tuesday lineup will all be Dick Wolf-created and produced shows. This goes along with NBC giving Wolf their entire Wednesday and Thursday night lineups. You know, it makes us hope that cops can, on one of Dick Wolf's shows, can investigate the criminal lack of originality network executives are displaying. Cara Delevingne is auctioning off an NFT of herself performing a monologue about her vagina called Mine, as in the secondhand embarrassment of knowing someone will pay a ton of money for a video of a woman just talking about a vagina is 100% mine. In other vagina news, Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop company is being sued by a consumer who says Paltrow's This Smells Like My Vagina candle exploded. I mean, this was bound to happen once the right person found the candle's G-spot, am I right? Spotify is coming out with an auto-transcript feature for podcasts, which is great news for deaf people who didn't know that Joe Rogan talks out of his ass. Ben Platt is calling out randos being jerks online who were saying that he was too old to play a teenager after the trailer for Dear Evan Hansen was released yesterday. Thankfully, Matt Gaetz was not amongst the group criticizing Platt, as Matt is avoiding anything having to do with teens these days. Since no week can take place without someone mentioning their name, today, Demi Lovato announced that they're non-binary and want to be referred to by new pronouns, which does beg the question, what are the proper pronouns for attention-seeking asshole? Now let's send it over to tonight's TMI Daily Cast and Crew Roundtable. Stay safe!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of TMI Daily. I'm Veronica Aiello, and as always, I'm joined by some of my TMI Daily crew. Later on in the show, we're going to be joined by filmmaker Kevin Derrick. We're going to be talking to him about his career and his new documentary, More Than Miyagi. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Let's go around and say hello to everyone watching at home or listening to our TMI Daily podcast. Let's start with you, Pete.
I just want to say thank you to New York State Attorney General. Attorney General Letitia James. For finally saying the same thing that we've all said all along, that Trump should be investigated as a criminal, not because he's civil.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Letitia James. Danny, how you doing?
Hey, everybody. And as Joe would say, today's National Devil's Food Cake Day. And turn beauty inside out day. And for all my people at work, today was our day, World IBD Day, which is what we specialize in. So let's bring awareness to IBD, and let's hope there's a cure one day for it.
Is that something to do with irritable bowels?
Inflammatory bowel disease.
Oh, that's shitty.
Yeah, no pun intended.
Yeah. Danny, what was the second day you said? Turn beauty what?
Turn beauty inside out.
Can you explain that? What exactly is that celebrating? I'm just curious.
Let the inside beauty of you show.
Oh, okay. Got
not the
it.
Not the disembowelment of pretty people.
That sounds like a good idea.
And Stuart.
How's it going, everybody? Go Caps.
Mm-hmm. And can I just say, we had that Ben Platt joke earlier on in the show, and I actually, that was the first thing I said.
Civil lives.
Okay. when I watched the trailer for Dear Evan Hansen, which I'm looking forward to very much. But yeah, Ben Platt definitely does not look like a 17-year-old in that trailer. So, but I'll still be watching because I love him. Okay, let's.
It's so great. If you want to laugh, you got to look at some of the great comments on Instagram and on Twitter about it, because they're better and better each time.
Well, they like curled his hair to make him try to look like younger. So I think Stewart. Well, I think we mentioned this earlier. But I think Stewart would do a great job as Dear Evan Hansen. So
I think so. Mm-hmm.
We think so. But I think you can't sing, right, Stewart?
What?
You said you can't hit those notes.
No, like, yeah, it's too high for me. I'll play the friend, Jared.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want you to know that we have faith in you, and we would have loved to have seen you in that role.
Yeah,
okay. Stewart, you will be seen.
Yes, you will be seen.
It's you will be found, but that's close.
The found scene.
Or
you will be found. I know it's something that you will be found.
Once you're found.
Discovered?
Once you're found.
So. Found, done, very done.
Okay, well, let's
waving through a screen, waving through a Zoom window.
So let's start tonight's show. Sure, it's always good to discuss real-world news and give our opinions, but it's a lot more fun to discuss stories we have absolutely no way of knowing are true. For that reason, it's time for This Week in Gossip, in which we've gone through all of the major gossip websites and pulled some of the biggest stories of the week, none of which we verify to be true. I'll tell you the story, and you can either tell us what you know about it or just comment on it. Okay, so our first gossip story tonight has to do with Kim Kardashian. Now, according to gossip sites, she doesn't want her kids to watch old episodes of Keeping Up with the Kardashians because she doesn't want to explain to them who Chris Humphries is. Now, is that really what she should be worried about? That's what she's worried about? I think there's other things she probably doesn't want her kids to see.
Ray J.
Yes. Let's start with you, Stuart.
I mean, I don't think she should let her kids watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians because it's not good for children to see, but not because of Chris Humphries.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Pete.
I think if that's the thing she's worried about, her kids probably shouldn't watch the BET Awards either. Mm-hmm. Just saying. Or the ESPN Awards.
Any NBA game.
Any NBA game. Maybe a few football games. Mm-hmm. Definitely nothing by Brandy or her brother. You know, there's a lot of things your kids probably shouldn't be watching.
And I don't know, maybe like the 10,000 pictures of her ass. I mean, I don't know. Again, that's just me. Danny.
I don't like commenting on this family because I really could care less what they do. You know, but let's face it, these kids are going to go to school. They're going to have classmates. They're going to have classmates who have friends, who have siblings, who know what's going on. They're going to find out. So it's probably better for her to just come out and tell them little by little, you know, so they don't have more therapy than what will already be needed.
Mm-hmm. Kids, remember when daddy told you mommy was a hoe?
Well, I always think, too, when it comes to this family, these people clearly don't even like, they don't care about their kids. Because if they did, they wouldn't do half of the stuff that they do or post. And I'm not trying to be a prude in any way, shape, or form. But just looking at some of their Instagrams, which I've accidentally looked at because it's popped up on Instagram, not because I follow them.
Okay, be honest.
Yeah, now seeing some of that stuff, I mean, it's just disgusting. They're so gross. But okay, moving on to Demi Lovato. So Demi Lovato is now identifying as non-binary and wants to be referred to as they or them. So before we get into this story, I just want to preface it by saying it's not that we have a problem with her pronouns or anybody's pronouns, but we've talked about this on the show before. In fact, we had a whole show dedicated to it. It's the fact that this girl always has to get attention and monetize off of it. So I just want to make that clear before Pete talks. Go ahead, Pete.
Well, with that being said, them is a promotion seeking asshole. They just want to be in the news every week for something, and they do things like announce that they are no longer a she, but instead a them and a they. And why, strangely enough, in case anybody was wondering, why did they pick this week to do it? Because they're putting out a podcast this week. Because that is part of their modus operandi. Every time they have something to promote, either they overdose, they become cutters, they become anorexic, or they become a pronoun. So that's what
they get triggered by a yogurt shop.
Yeah, or they get triggered by a yogurt shop.
Yeah.
So they can go fuck themselves.
Go ahead, Daddy.
Okay, Demi, you have a nice voice. You sang the national anthem. Was it at the Super Bowl not too long ago? We know you have talent when it comes to your vocals. Take a year off. Relax. Get out of the limelight. It's only going to help you. Because all this is, you know, you're being an attention-grabbing money.
Oh, say it. Say it.
Yeah, I can't. You know, just get out of the limelight. Just get out of the spotlight. Relax. It's going to do you good.
Mm-hmm. See, and you know what? And that's all great. And I agree with you, Danny. But I don't think she's capable of doing that. I really do think she doesn't know how to be any other way but this, you know?
And you would hope she has people around her that would advise her properly. Yeah. You know, she was always pretty good with Wilmer, you know, but ever since that relationship.
That's sad. You're better Wilmer Valderrama than you are.
Fez.
You might as well just set your genitals on fire if that's the best you can hope for. But no, I mean, you know, the part that just annoys me is that there's some kid somewhere who's so confused about what they are right now that they've decided that they can no longer be he or she. And now they are just like hijacking it because they want to, because she wants to promote a podcast. So she's hijacking somebody else's pain just so she can kind of keep relevant. And like I said, her best career move at this point would be to die, because that would be the ultimate thing that she could say, oh my God, I can't believe I died. Now I have this new Netflix special about it.
Well, and again, and that's just it. You know, there are people that aren't famous like her that are struggling, that are going through some serious, you know, issues, like all the ones that, you know, she claims to have. But if you look at the timeline, and again, you can go back and look at our episode, we took every single time that she's come out saying that something else is wrong with her. Right after that, you know, she's either monetizing on a new song or a documentary or whatnot. And that's why we are so critical of her. We are not being critical of people who do have, you know, mental illness or deal with, you know, substance abuse and whatnot. So that, I just want to make that clear one more time. Stuart, and then I'm going to move on to the next story.
I mean, I kind of disagree. Like, I'm glad she's able to come out. If I hope it's genuine. You know, like you said, it's awfully coincidental when she comes out and says all these and shares all these vulnerable things about herself versus when she needs to promote something.
Mm-hmm.
But she was in rehab multiple times, right? Like, I feel like your gender identity should be something that's like, if you are struggling in rehab, that's something that should sort of come out then, right? Like, it doesn't seem like it seems like sort of when you're re-evaluating your life, that should come out beforehand. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, with her, again, things come out when she has something coming out. And that's what it seems like. So, I mean, again, and we, you know, we have proof of that. Okay, let's move on to Snoop Dogg. So apparently Snoop Dogg is fed up with his friend, Martha Stewart, who calls him night and day because she's lonely in pandemic isolation. I would love to hear those conversations. Like, I just... You know, I that's what I would love to hear. I'd love to be a fly on that wall. Stuart, let's start with you. And then
Martha Stewart's pretty gangsta. I'm going to be honest. She went to prison. She didn't snitch on anybody. She did her time. And her and Snoop Dogg have been, like, friends. Like, that's, you know, they've hung out a lot. And, like, I don't know why she's alone. Like, I'm sure she can make some friends that aren't Snoop Dogg.
Non-Snoop-related dogs.
Maybe she can do like a cooking group on Facebook or something like that. You know,
ex-cons who cook.
Yeah, or a Reddit group. There's a Reddit group for everything.
I don't think Martha Stewart should be on Reddit. I don't think anybody should be on Reddit, but that...
Okay, Pete?
No, I mean, this was my favorite story when we were looking at all the celebrity gossip stories today, because apparently the story goes that that he actually is afraid to answer his phone because she calls him all the time, day and night, to tell him how lonely she is and how she can't wait for this isolation to be over. And like at some point, he just got tired of listening to it. Now, there's probably absolutely no truth to this.
Yeah.
But wouldn't it be nice if it was? Because it just sounds so great.
Yeah, that's
a great thing. Like, you know you're in a bad place when you're lonely and the only person you can think of calling is Snoop Dogg.
He just sounds like he'd be a good time, though.
I've heard nothing but good things about Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, I'm not saying anything wrong with him. I'm just saying, where is it in that mental space in your head that where you're like, you know what? I've got no one else left. It's just me and Snoop.
See, I think he would send her like a gift package, like a care package with stuff, you know? I mean, herbal remedies, batteries, toys.
Yeah, why is it?
See, I would love to just like call Snoop Dogg, like if I have a problem or if I'm going through some stress, because he seems like the kind of guy that would just like, you know, he's always so mellow and he'd be like, yeah, it's cool. You know?
I bet he gives great advice.
I think so too. Yeah, I would love to have Snoop Dogg's phone number. So maybe one day.
There's a reason he's mellow.
And I'm all for that. Queen Elizabeth is jumping into the microbrewery business, according to some website, by producing two new beers she hopes will bring in more income for the monarchy. I love this story. This is my favorite story this week. Pete, what do you thought?
You know what? This kind of breaks the rules because this story is actually verified true.
What?
Which is just the best part about it. Not only they come from hops that are on one of her properties. And so it's being promoted as the Queen's beer. There's two different flavors. Plus, she has a line of slow gins and I think vodkas and a couple of other mixes that she's selling. So yes, the Queen is now a microbrewer.
She's taken the death of her husband and the exodus of her grandson pretty hard, I think, if she's microbrewing now.
Well, I mean, I don't think she's there with like a bag and she's fermenting it for like a week. Like, I think this is something that's been in the works for quite a while, and like, there's probably a company behind it. But yeah, they get the barley and the hops from her property. So
yeah,
but most importantly, are they available in the U.S.?
No, not yet. This is just in the U.K.
No, we gotta dump them in the harbor as soon as they get here.
I would have brought it to the barbecue. Just saying.
Well, why don't you look for it, Daddy? You might get lucky. Try Venmo. I'm not Venmo. I mean, with Bevmo, not Venmo.
I'm like Venmo.
Oh, sorry, Bevmo. Philip online is saying, didn't they kick Megan out for trying to brand? So, that's. And Todd, our friend Todd also says she has her own line of sex toys, according to him, that we don't know about. So.
The Royal Scepter.
There you go.
So he is a real doll.
So the next story has to do with Gwyneth Paltrow. Now they say, again, gossip sites say that she used a celebrity card to skip a 50-person line at the Santa Monica DMV last week, and she was in and out in minutes. You know what? If she did, good for her, because I hate those DMV lines. I would have done it too. Stuart.
I think that's the least fucked up thing Gwyneth Paltrow did that day. I'm gonna be like, yes, it's not for all those other people, but also like, it's the DMV. No one likes the DMV. I think if all of us had that opportunity, we would. And I guess it gives her more time to work on vagina candles.
Yeah, there you go. Because that's important. She needs to have that time. Pete.
Sadly, this also is verified true. Because TMZ got photos of it happening. So, but it's just like, what's great is that, like, if you look at the pictures, there's one where she looks like she's embarrassed about the fact that she's bypassing all the people standing in line because she's got her head down as some guy's like walking her into the DMV, and then like 5 minutes later she's back out. But like, you know, I ask myself, like, is this really that much of a story? And I'm like, yeah, I guess so. Well, why not? I mean, but you know what? I guess if you've spent your whole life, you know, in a certain way where people treat you a certain way, I guess like getting access to the DMV quicker is really, like Stuart said, the least of the stupid things you could do today.
Yeah. So, you know what? And let's face it. If we all could do that, we probably would do that too. So there's like douchier things that celebrities can do that, you know, that are worthless, I think.
And does anybody really want to be waiting in front of her and back of her in line for that amount of time?
Imagine the conversation she'd be having with somebody.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's probably everybody to serve. It's probably the less time the general public spends around Gwyneth Paltrow, the better.
Yeah, that's for certain. Nobody wants to smell her vagina candle.
So the next story says that friends are worrying that Kanye West is binge eating himself into an early grave after he split with Kim and is allegedly now tipping the scales at 310 pounds. I have no comment about this at all. So I'm just going to let you guys talk, Pete.
I mean, this is, you know, I know I said earlier that the Snoop Dogg story was my favorite story of the day, or was it the Queen story? Was one of them. But in reality, this, if you see the way that this is being done online, it's much better, because there's like 6 or 7 photos of him eating. Like, it's just like in every photo, it's like just like he apparently does not eat like a dainty person, because like there was a photo of him with like a cheeseburger that like half the fucking burgers in his mouth while he's eating it. And you know, the reality of it is, I mean, I know he's had weight issues in the past, but they had a couple pictures on there. He's like, wow, he looked pretty fat. And I don't know if this is like now Kanye or this is pre-Kim Kanye, because he had been a little heavier pre-Kim. You know, he had to take off all the weight so that he could, but it's just like, you know, all, I mean, when you see the article, and I do tell people that if you want to laugh, go look it up, that friends are saying that Kanye is eating himself into an early grave, because the article, like I said, they found pictures. Somebody must have hated him when they took these pictures.
Wait, is it the picture that we have on screen right now?
Oh, that's actually, you know, I couldn't find the article when I was pulling the pictures later, so I just found one picture of him. There's a lot of pictures of him eating, I will tell you that, though.
He likes to eat. Who doesn't? Anybody else want to chime in before we move on? Okay. So the next story has to do with Kelly Clarkson. So according to gossip sites, she feels threatened by the producers of The Voice, who have hired Ariana Grande to replace Nick Jonas, and is quietly telling colleagues that she will make Ariana's time on the show a nightmare. Go ahead, Stuart.
Why does she dislike her? Like, what did Ariana Grande do to Kelly Clarkson?
Well, I think it kind of
has to beef.
I think it has to do with like that she thinks she was the woman on the show, and now Ariana's going to come on, and she's younger.
Is she the only woman on the show? I don't know anything about.
Well, she would be. She would be if because they're replacing Nick Jonas. So then she would be. She would have been the only woman until Ariana Grande came on.
Mm.
That chair has had a rotating, you know, list of judges, because it's been usually been lately Gwen Stefani. So she hasn't really had beef with the other females. I just think she's a younger person, mm-hmm. you know, but I don't like Ariana Grande, so she can go, you know.
Now, I think Kelly Clarkson should get over it.
She's fake. Everything about her is fake.
That's just, you know, a pop star. That
her voice is super high. It's just, it's not real. It's... And she milks Mac Miller's death every chance she gets.
That would have been so much better if he'd been friends with Demi Lovato, right? Because she could have used it so much better.
That's true.
But no,
well,
you
I never liked her after she. Well, I mean, I never liked her, period. And I don't know much about her, to be honest. And I'd like to keep it that way. But ever since the whole donut licking incident, I thought that was just so wrong. That was disgusting.
If I went on The Voice and she's the only person that turned around, I'd be like, no, thank you. I'm out. Mm-hmm.
See, I was thinking,
like, I'm not going to learn anything from her.
If I'm Kelly Clarkson and I want to make Ariana's life hell, what are the two words that would probably come to mind? I don't know. Gassy foods. Because if you want to make her life hell, I have a feeling that Kelly Clarkson could probably blow some bad thoughts. That's just my thought. I don't know why. I'm just saying it.
So speaking of Ariana Grande, it's been reported that Pete Davidson is claimed to be happy for his ex, who's Ariana Grande, after she announced that she married her boyfriend Dalton Gomez in a secret ceremony. So again, I got nothing to say about this. Go ahead, Pete.
Well, I mean, I'm just going to speak as a guy. No guy is ever happy for their ex-girlfriend. They're not. It doesn't matter. You could be her best friend. You're never happy for it. And this guy, like, she broke up with him, and then they had to send cops to Saturday Night Live because they thought he was going to commit suicide. So no, he's not fucking happy for her. His agent or his PR person put that out because that makes it look like he's moving on. And then, you know, and because of that, like, you know, they have to say it. Everybody has to say it. But no, nobody's ever happy. And you know what? Also, people watching right now, when you have a kid, nobody's happy you have a kid. They're just not. And when they come see your kid, they're not thrilled to see your kid. They're not. Being honest.
Okay. And to maybe quote
Danny is, because Danny seems to be the nicest person on earth. So maybe Danny's happy when people have kids and when they get married. Danny, are you happy for everybody?
Not her.
Wow,
and like, and like she on like her song says, "Thank you." Next.
Wow, Danny really does not like Ariana Grande.
I don't. I really don't.
That's interesting. I love your agency because you're so nice.
What a pain in the balls Ariana must be that Danny doesn't like her.
I know. That says a lot. Yeah. And I've known Danny for many, many years, and that says a lot. So
later on tonight, we're going to get Danny to call her the C word.
So our final story tonight has to do with JV. And he said that he and Beyonce, well, according to a gossip site, he said that him and Beyonce are not stage parents trying to push daughter Blue Ivy into entertainment. I call BS. These people love attention. And haven't they, like, didn't the kid get nominated for a Grammy?
No,
she won a Grammy. Oh, she won a Grammy.
She won.
Okay, yeah. Well, this is definitely false. I verified it to be false.
No.
Go ahead. Wait, Stuart, go ahead.
Actually, I mean, I don't know, obviously, whether or not Blue Ivy actually, like, wants to do these things or her parents just sort of put her there. But I somewhat have an issue of celebrities being like, oh, I'm not pushing my kids into doing these things where their whole, like, when Beyonce was pregnant, like, there was this whole PR stuff, and they, you know, they announcing their baby to the world and, like, sort of showing off. And it's sort of like, if you don't want your kid, if you don't want to push your kid in the public spotlight, you did it before she was born. So, you didn't really give her a choice. You know, there are celebrities that just don't talk about their kids because they know that once they do, it's sort of, they lose that privacy. And I mean, it's sort of BS that they didn't, because they were very open about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go ahead, Pete.
See, I want to correct you, Veronica, because I don't think that the story is false. I think Jay-Z saying that they're not stage parents is a fucking lie. Because I think that Jay-Z and Beyonce have a little bit of that same syndrome that Will and Jada have, because they cannot be around somebody that's not as famous as they are.
Yeah.
So we got to make our kids just as famous, or it wouldn't be worth it. I mean, what did her daughter win a Grammy for? For somewhere being deep down in the background mix of one of the songs that she knew was going to be one of the songs she could release to the Grammy people. And so of course, you know, she put her into the credit of that. Like, you know, it's almost like, well, you know, when Stevie Wonder wrote "Isn't She Lovely," which is a classic song, that's his baby on the song. But his fucking baby didn't get a Grammy for it. You know why? Because Stevie Wonder didn't need his kid to be a fucking a superstar like him. You know, he was like, "Fuck it, I'm happy with this the way it is." The kid's on the record, but he's not doing much other than crying. So, but Beyonce and Jay-Z, they had to put that kid in there. And you know what? If I wanted to believe that they weren't really doing this kind of thing, then maybe there wouldn't be pictures of her Grammy on her dresser, because I've seen those pictures today too. So Beyonce and Jay-Z can eat me, because they're definitely doing that, and their kid's going to end up like Demi Lovato. So that's it.
Anybody else have a comment about this story? Because go ahead.
Damn, I think he said it all.
It's true.
But I will say that random Spotify note, Bonnie and Clyde came out today on my playlist, and that's actually a really good song with Jay-Z and Beyonce.
I haven't heard that in a while. There's nothing, I'm not saying that they're artistically, either one of them is is not an excellent artist. But I'm saying that they may not be the best parents.
Oh, no. I just want to say something nice.
Difference.
You know, I have to say something nice, okay, after the last story.
It's like Lindsay Lohan's parents, not the best parents. You know, I mean, Lindsay Lohan was a good actress for a little while, but she had bad parents. And look what happened. You know, it's like it's the Kardashian. Chris Kardashian before at one point. No, I'm kidding. No, she was never a good mother. I mean, first she was married to a guy that helped OJ get away with murder, and then, you know, she had sex with OJ and had a kid with him.
Allegedly.
Yes. Yeah. I was going to say it, but you beat me to it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a big difference between being artistically talented and being a bad parent. And I'm sure they're one and the same, you know?
Well, let's not say that Kris Jenner is artistically talented. No,
by no means. No, she's talented at basically popping out vapid children.
And keeping out her children, because that's what she's done.
Yeah, I mean, her vagina is her greatest quality, apparently.
Well, you know, she did say, I think a couple of days ago in an interview, I read some more that she said that while she was married to Rob Kardashian, she never paid for anything, that she didn't know what anything cost. And she's telling this story, and I'm like, this is not earning you any points. That's our point exactly. But anyways, I think our guest is waiting to come on, so let's go ahead and bring him on. Everyone always wishes that they could take the things they love and turn them into a career. Well, our guest tonight, Kevin Derrick, actually was able to take his passion for martial arts and make it the basis for a successful career as a documentary director and producer. He most recently directed a documentary about groundbreaking Japanese actor and comedian Pat Morita called More Than Miyagi. Please welcome Kevin to TMI Daily. Hi, Kevin. How are you doing tonight?
I'm pretty good, Veronica. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. And I can't tell you how excited I am to talk to you, and all of us are. As a huge Karate Kid fan and a fan of Pat Morita's, thank you again for coming on. So I'm going to ask you a question.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to go ahead and open it to the panel. So you have you have a very interesting story, and we actually did some research about you. I'd love to start talking about your life a little, if that's okay with you.
Sure, no problem.
So you were born in Iran, but you grew up here in California. And you say that when you were born, most Americans didn't know where Iran was, or if they did, they would say that their family vacationed there recently.
Right.
So how old were you when you came to the United States?
We came here 1978. I was probably like 9 years old. And so back then, no one really knew what Iran was because, you know, you tell somebody you're from Iran, they go, wow, that sounds exotic, or I just vacationed there or something like that. And then a year later, when the revolution happened, even though it was, you know, across the world, some other place, it affected us. I mean, that thing went on for 444 days. And every day that the hostage crisis, thank goodness they didn't, you know, harm anyone. If they would have harmed someone, they would have probably killed all of us here. But anyways, you know, all they could see on the television when you turned the TV on, there was only like three stations, channel 2, 4, and 7. So when you turned it on, there was a countdown. The first day of hostage crisis, second day, third day. So that's all people were seeing. So when you went out in school, they go, oh, hey, Kayvon. Actually, my real name is Kayvon, so I changed it to Kevin. So it's, yeah, so they would say, hey, Kayvon, where are you from? Or I heard you're from Iran. And then they, you know, they started circulating that, yeah, I'm from Iran. And then, you know, every day I would come home, either I was punched in the face, spat on the face, thrown in the trash can. It just went on for about a year and a half. So actually, that's what I'm making my next feature about. It's what I experienced through those couple of years. So yeah, it was kind of brutal, but you know, you just have to deal with it. I mean, look what you know, other minorities are going through. You know, the blacks, the Asians, it just everyone is getting their turn. You just have to wait and, you know, deal with it. It's just, I mean, it's not easy, but you know, you just have to be stronger than what the situation gives you. So yeah, it wasn't a good experience. So every time I think about it, I get a little emotional, but yeah, so I came here when I was 9.
Wow, what an incredible story. And I'm glad that you're going to be able to, you know, to put this on film.
Oh, thanks.
So from what I read, you first were introduced to martial arts when you were 9 years old. Can you tell us a little bit about your introduction to it and why it resonated with you from such an early age?
Right. So when all the discrimination was happening, my dad said, hey, you guys want to, he told my brother and I, hey, he said, you guys want to take up martial arts? So if something happens, you can defend yourself. I said, okay, that sounds good. So back then we were all into Bruce Lee and the nunchucks and all that. So I was a little bit familiar with karate, but I didn't know, but Bruce Lee was taking Kung Fu and I thought everything was like, you know, Kung Fu karate was the same. So walking distance from our house, there was a YMCA. So my dad took us there, my brother and I, and we started, doing all these forms and stuff. I kind of gravitated towards it. I don't know what it was. It was just, I liked it. I don't know if it was the social aspect or what it was. I made a lot of friends. But my brother, after the first day, said, what the heck is this? I don't want to do this. So anyway, so I've been doing it since then off and on. So I've been kind of involved. So my instructor, his name was Dennis Strong. He passed away recently, but he was training under Sensei Fumio Demura, which he is the stunt coordinator for Pat Morita, and he did all Pat Morita's stunt work. So that's how I got started, and I kind of, it's kind of, my story's kind of similar to the Karate Kid, because I had my own Mr. Miyagi, which was Fumio Demura, and he ended up being the person that, you know, taught Pat Morita and all that stuff. So it's kind of weird how this whole thing happened. But yeah, that's, I've been involved since then off and on, and I'm doing, I haven't done it because I got injured a couple of years ago. I joined this kickboxing class and all the people in the class were younger than I was. So they were doing all these flying kicks and all that stuff. So I was trying to keep up with them. And I did a spinning kick and I landed on my back on the base of the punching bag. So I hurt my back. So since then, I haven't, you know, been training as much as I should.
Yeah, you got to take it easy for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
So before we get into the Karate Kid, you actually mentioned Bruce Lee, and that was one of my other questions. Prior to the Karate Kid, you had people like Chuck Norris, you know, Bruce Lee, Jackie Chan. Would you say that Bruce Lee was probably one of your biggest influences?
Oh, yeah. He was really big back in Iran. I mean, in every country, everyone knew who he was. We used to, since he was so good in the nunchucks, he actually was taught by my instructor, Fumio Demura, how to do nunchucks. For people who don't know. So basically back then in Iran, we used to get broomsticks and like cut them into nunchucks and start, you know, that's how we learned how to do nunchucks. So when I came here, I was already familiar with Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee is big in every country. Everyone knows him.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So the original Karate Kid film came out in 1984. What kind of impact did that film have on you personally?
Right. So we were all in karate. So that film, when it came out, it kind of legitimized the whole karate world. Everyone wanted to sign up for karate. I remember the class that we were in, people were lined up like on a daily basis. Everyone wanted to learn karate. So it had more of an impact on my instructors and people who were teaching karate. But for me, it was nice to see something that I've been doing most of my life out on the big screen, like, you know, now, oh, I've been doing this before you guys. So it felt kind of good that I was involved in something before it, you know, came on the screen. So.
Mm-hmm. So the first film you directed was called The Real Karate Kid, in which you followed a group of young people who were studying and competing. Can you tell us a little bit about that film?
Yeah, it was when I moved to Mission Viejo. By then I had a son that he was 9, 10 years old. So I told him, hey, do you want to start studying karate? So we went to the local school here called Japan Karate Federation. And while he was taking karate there, we were just hanging out with one of my friends, Oscar Alvarez. And he said, you know, why don't we start doing a film, do a documentary or something? And he had kids the same age and he wanted to do something about kids. And I said, okay, you love kids, I love karate, let's join together and do, you know, something about Karate Kids. So we went and hit up the local teacher and we asked them, hey, what if we take four of your kids and follow them through their journey, because they were practicing and trying to get ready for the, you know, the nationals and they wanted to become a world champion. So basically that was my story. And that's how the first documentary got started.
And that's awesome. So speaking about some of your former documentaries, The Real Miyagi, which is about this, your sensei, the one that you just talked to us about. Can you tell us a little bit more about like any personal lessons that you learned from him? Kind of like the way Daniel felt about Mr. Miyagi. What do you remember about him or anything that stands out to you?
You mean Fumi Ademura, what I learned about Fumi Ademura? Yeah. Everyone loves this guy. I mean, he's kind to everyone. Anyone who approaches him and asks him any kind of questions and sits with him and talks with him, he talks to you in a way that you are the only person in that room and I only care about you, not everybody else that's around you. And everyone says the same thing. And that's why everyone loves this guy. When I always post something on Facebook about him, it's just everything is positive. And he was one of the only masters that actually went out and started doing interviews and magazines and books. And that's how he became popular, because the Japanese masters that were coming here, most of them didn't know English. I mean, his English wasn't good, but at least he went out there and tried to, you know, show what he knew and all that stuff. But the other Japanese masters were keeping to themselves. So that's why he became as popular as he is. He actually made the first Nunchuck book that came out, I think, early 1970s, before even, you know, the Enter the Dragon Bruce Lee was made. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. So now I want to talk about More Than Miyagi, your most recent film, which is about Pat Morita, who most people best know as Mr. Miyagi from the Karate Kid films. Now, you actually met him when you were 15, right before he starred in the movies. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk a little bit about that experience?
You've done your research. Most interviews that I do, like, no one even, they're just asking like generic questions. So that's very impressive. My instructor, Fumi Ademura, he had an annual tournament every year. And every year there was a celebrity there, because since he was doing stunt coordinating, he knew a lot of celebrities. So Chuck Norris would come, someone from James Bond, I remember. I just posted his picture on my Instagram. I just found it. So every year there was someone. That 1983 was Pat Morita. And when I saw him, I only knew him as, you know, Arnold from Happy Days. Mm-hmm. So he was sitting right next to my teacher, and right next to Pat, there was an empty seat. So I said, okay, let me go sit there and just, you know. And so I just went and sat right next to him. And I said, hey, Pat, how are you? And I started talking about, like, you know, Happy Days. I was 15 years old. Like, what do I know? Anyways, he just basically started talking to me. He was such a nice guy. I think he could resonate with kids because, you know, all the time that he spent in internment camps and all that stuff. So anyways, we talked not for too long, for like a couple of minutes. And then my brother was right next to me and I said, hey, can you get a picture of us? He had one of those 35 millimeter cameras. So that's the only experience, the only encounter I had with Pat Morita was in 1983. And who would have known that like 30 years later, I would be making a documentary on his life. So that's kind of strange.
Yeah, that is so amazing. What a great story. So when you decided to take on this project, how much did you already know about Pat Morita personally? And what were some of the things that you learned that might have surprised you that you didn't know?
Right. Because of my instructor and they were good friends, so I knew a lot about him. But the only thing that I knew was, you know, like the films that he was in. But I didn't really know his personal life. So when I started doing research and talking to people, I asked my sensei and I asked him, you know, what was the reason that he passed away and all that stuff. Usually Japanese, they want to keep to themselves and they don't want to express how they feel. Mm-hmm. So my sensei would just do this, go, too much drink. He wouldn't really say too many things. So I didn't, the only thing that I learned was the amount of alcohol that he consumed. That was surprising to me. I mean, when I talked to the his personal assistant of 15 years, she said that, you know, he would put vodka in his coffee every morning before he went and shot a film. So can you imagine every film that you see him in, Karate Kid 1, 2, 3, 4, every Happy Day, he was drunk the whole time and no one knew it. No one knew it. Yeah. So that was the only surprising thing to me.
Mm-hmm. So you were able to get many people from his career to speak with you, including much of the surviving Happy Days cast and the main characters from the Karate Kid films. Who were you most excited to talk to, and who was the most revealing and interesting?
The most revealing and interesting was Robert Mark Kamen, because since he wrote the script, I mean, he's the one who started all of this stuff. I mean, the reason that we're talking is all because of Robert Mark Kamen. So he was the only person that was open and started telling me about his alcoholism and all that stuff. But the people that were most interesting to me was the Happy Days people, because I grew up watching them. I was 9, 10 years old when Happy Days was on, and there was not much else on. So it's not like now where there's so many different shows out there that, you know, people are watching different things. Back then, it was just Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, and Three's Companies, and people would go watch those three shows. And then the following day, they would talk about it. Hey, can you believe what Fonzie did? Can you believe what this person did? So for me, Happy Days was like, it was surreal to, you know, had watched them when I was 9 years old. Now I'm sitting in their living room and I'm talking to them. So for me, like Miriam Ross, we went to her house, and the first thing she said, Kevin, Oscar, before we start shooting, you guys sit down and let's have cookies and lemonade. And that's what she would do on the Happy Days set, you know, when Potsy and Ralph and everyone came in. It was just weird. It was just, but yeah, to me, Happy Days people were the most, yeah, I completely enjoy the Happy Days crew.
So that's amazing. You got to have cookies and lemonade with Mrs. Cunningham. Yes. That is a dream come true.
It is. It was a dream come true.
I'm a Happy Days nut.
I took a picture of it, too. I have a picture. I can send it to you.
I mean, that's amazing. I think that's such a great story. So I have a few more questions before I hand it over. So I want to talk about Cobra Kai. We love Cobra Kai. We just like are obsessed with Cobra Kai. So how do you think it stands up to the legacy of the films?
I think they've done a great job to incorporate what the adults were used to seeing, and they have incorporated, you know, younger actors in there that the younger generation can also, you know, resonate with it. For me, it's great that they have been true to Pat's legacy, and they're able to show Pat Morita throughout, you know, the whole season. I mean, I'm a fan just like you guys. I've been watching it, and I can't wait until season 4 comes out. So yeah, I'm very happy for, you know, the way they went about it and produced it. So I'm really happy for them.
Yeah, I really do love the fact that they still incorporate, you know, his legacy into it. And I think that was genius that they did that, because that's the connection that we have, the older people that are watching Cobra Kai.
I mean, if you really think about it, the success of the Karate Kid film was because of Pat Morita's performance. Mm-hmm. And if Pat Morita wasn't in there and the Karate Kid wouldn't have been as successful, we wouldn't have seen the Cobra Kai series right now. So it's all thanks to Pat and the writing of Robert Mark Kamen. Mm-hmm.
So my last question is, what do you think, in your personal opinion, that the Karate Kid movies are more specifically about the Mr. Miyagi character that has made this film so important and beloved by so many fans?
There is something in that film that it resonates with people. Whether you've been bullied, you can relate to the bull, you know, the stuff that's happening. Or if you never had a father, Mr. Miyagi is someone that you wish your father was, like someone who could teach you, inspire you, and at the same time kick everyone's ass. So it's just, there's a little things in that film that, you know, hope everyone can relate to. Even if you had a bad relationship, you can relate to it. So that's why it resonated with so many people.
So before I hand it over to the panel, I just want to say one last thing to you. I loved the documentary. I thought it was so well done. And I don't want to give too much away for people that haven't seen it, but what I do want to tell you is I just love how you not only, you know, focused on his career, but his love story with his wife, Evelyn. It just, I mean, I don't know what it was about that it just got me so much, because, you know, you just showed unconditional love between a couple. Yeah, he was a famous person, but he was struggling through so many things. And I think you did such a great job with that. So that's why I love the documentary so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
So I want to hand it over to you guys now. Does anybody have any questions for Kevin? Chris.
First, thank you for coming on, Kevin.
Oh, no problem. I like your poster in the back, the Egyptian poster. It's cool.
Oh, thank you. My biggest question is like, you know, I look at somebody like Pat as, you know, again, like, you know, P said, he was kind of groundbreaking because, yeah, at the time you didn't see a lot of Asian Americans. But I think he's more groundbreaking because I think he was part of that crew in that, or he should be talked about in that same crew as comedians who went on to become like fantastic actors. Like, I mean, the guy won an Oscar, but yet when it comes to the, like, you know, comedians turned actors, he's never talked about, you know, as far as like, you know, people talk about like Robin Williams all the time about how, you know, he's trained in Juilliard and stuff like that. But like, I think that Pat's up there with him. And my question is, do you think it's because he didn't become famous as a comedian first, or do you think it's because just people didn't recognize him as a,
I think it's because of the internet. Mm-hmm. I mean, back then when he died, when he was doing all this stuff, there was no internet. There was no Facebook. There's no YouTube. There's nothing. Yeah. I mean, he's been passed away for 15 years. And that's basically towards the end of his life is when the, you know, YouTube and all that stuff started. If we still had, you know, all these platforms back then, I'm sure he would have been just like Robin Williams and all those other people.
Yeah, that's
fair. Any more questions for Kevin? Stuart or Ian? Oh, go ahead, Stuart.
Oh, what's your favorite Karate Kid moment or movie?
I like the first one the most. And my favorite part is when Ralph is in the backyard and he's bored and he says, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that, or whatever he says. And then it's finally revealed all this time that he's been spending on the, you know, all these facts off, facts on, what it means. To me, that was like, I went, wow. That was like my favorite part of the Karate Kid film.
We actually have that up on the screen as we speak.
That's definitely, yeah.
So it's a great moment for sure. Pete, go ahead.
You know, I was thinking about it last night when we were kind of had just finished watching the movie, that films about martial arts are often kind of taken lightly because of the fact that, you know, some people think that the only people that do these films aren't like your higher echelon of actors. You got your Steven Seagals, Chuck Norris's. But I think Karate Kid kind of was one of the few times when people took it seriously. And by the way, we live in the Valley and I never see anybody doing karate, and that bothers me.
But that's why we moved to the Valley, because we're karate people.
Not one single person has round kicked me yet since I've been out here. But I'm just wondering, do you think that maybe part of the allure of the films was because it did kind of take everything seriously, as opposed to like a lot of these other films where you kind of, oh, it's another Chuck Norris movie or something like that?
Right. But I don't want to really offend anyone, but, you know, the people who are good at martial arts, they're not good actors. Those films haven't succeeded. The reason the Karate Kid succeeded because there were actors first and they tried to learn martial arts. And I think that's what anyone should do when they make a film. Don't base it on their abilities, base it on their acting ability so they can perform. The other stuff you can always teach someone. Like, for example, majority of the people don't know karate. So when you're looking at the Karate Kid, you don't know whether what they're doing is correct or not. But if someone that's been in karate looks at their poses and their kicks, you go, oh my God, what the hell is this? Actually, people are convinced that this is karate. So I think being able to act is the most important thing. So that's the reason Steven Seagal. And by the way, I interviewed Steven Seagal for a previous documentary. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was an experience all by itself. But
yeah, that was about that. I'll screen.
I cannot talk about that, unfortunately.
We're off screen.
Leave it at that.
We stop recording.
We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, we'll edit that part out.
One last question.
Go ahead, Chris.
Okay, Kevin.
Yes.
Now I got to ask you a real question. Oh. And Pete knows what's coming.
Oh, God. I don't know anything about it.
I don't know what's coming.
I just want to ask you this because I've had similar experience. I grew up being, you know, bullied from time to time as well. I understand that, you know, you did as well from what you tell us. Can we admit right now on camera that Daniel-san was the real bully of the Karate Kid?
Yes.
Can we admit that?
We've been debating this for a while now. Kevin.
We've had this conversation three times.
Say, if you watch the movie, he's the real villain, okay?
A lot of people are bad guys. There's actually a video on YouTube that describes all that stuff that you're saying. But I mean, looking at it now, yeah, maybe.
Maybe Kevin. Come on. Search deep in yourself. Bring us a yes.
He's going to kill me if I say that he was the bully, so I got to stay safe.
It's better to stay safe.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll take that. But you know what's in your heart.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we've had this debate many, many times. Did we ask Ron? We had Ron Thomas on with us,
oh,
too.
Oh, he's such a nice guy.
Really nice guy.
Great. Did we ask him that, too?
I think this is the genesis of the conversation.
Yes. Oh, 100%. You think we're going to have a Cobra Kai member on and me not ask if he was the
But until we get William Zabka, okay?
Oh, if we get him. Oh,
oh we know what his answer is going to be.
I know. Okay, so any last questions or? Okay, well, Kevin, thank you again so much for coming on, and we're definitely going to be looking forward to your next documentary, and hopefully you'll come back on with us sometime.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Thank you for
joining us. You're welcome. Have a good night.
All right, you too.
Bye.
Bye.
That's our show for tonight. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you back here again tomorrow at 6 p.m. Bye, everyone. Have a good night and stay safe. Bye.